I just want to say to Brother David that Barbara and I and the group have been talking about the possibility raised by someone that you knew well and we all knew well. You were cousins. The idea that we'd be in a second axial period, the first axial age, for those that might not be familiar with it, is the 1,000 years, the millennium before the time of Jesus, before the year zero, had there been a year zero. And that's the period of time in which the foundations of all of the great religious traditions were laid, the classical traditions that we know today. Is it possible that we're in a second axial age, and what might that be all about? Is there such a thing as cultural evolution, and does it affect religion? So we simply wanted to put that out because we want to get into that if we have a chance today. But in order to get started, we're going to ask you a few questions, Brother David, that we have put to all of our guests, or we've only had one so far, but we'll put to all of our guests. And the first is this: if you were sitting down for the first time with a person from a different faith tradition who knew nothing at all about Christianity, what might be the most important things that you would tell them?
Well, let me first thank you, Jim, and Barbara, that you have invited me to be here, and it's a great pleasure for me, and this first question is an excellent question, and I would say if I had to sit down with someone from a different tradition, I would first have to try and establish a contact on a deeper basis than their particular faith or my particular faith, and would have to somehow contact that deep trust in life, which is the basic faith that all humans share. And that basic human faith then expresses itself at different times and in different cultural settings and triggered by different great figures like Buddha or Jesus or Moses or Muhammad, triggered by these figures, that same human faith which we all share expresses itself. And then I could say something about the Christian way in which through Jesus that basic human faith expressed itself. And he was a mystic who had this deep relationship to the divine ground from which we come, to God, as those who use that term say, had this deep relationship and felt towards God as one feels towards a mother or a father, and called God Father, but always with overtones of motherly love and motherly caring. And out of this sense of relationship to God sprang his nonviolent revolution. He was both a mystic and a nonviolent revolutionary. And the revolution consisted in seeing all human beings as sisters and brothers, and standing up, clearly standing up against oppression and exploitation and what has been called the domination system in this world. And therefore, he was eventually put away, crucified, which was the death for political offenders, both by the religious authorities of his time and place and by the civil authorities, which was the Roman occupation force. So what I would say is the Christian tradition took its origin from a mystic who was a social, nonviolent revolutionary, and all through history, the best of Christianity was represented by followers who took care of the poor and oppressed and helped them and served them in love. That is the key word.
Well, I think that's a beautiful summary. And one of the things that we have provided here for all of the people that are taking part in this series of calls is some written material, and I'll just acquaint you with some of it now. We, drawing from the Swiss scholar Fridtjof Schoen, whose work I know you're familiar with, he once wrote something that I've never forgotten. He said, every religion is superior to every other by virtue of something. By virtue of something, every religion superior to every
something
other.
Something or other.
By virtue of something it does best. So we asked the question, well, what's the excellence of each of the traditions we'll be talking about? And see what you think of this. Christianity, one of its excellences is that it is a unique vision of the human-divine connection and the power of love as the essence of that connection, and the person of Jesus Christ, as you've described him, as one of the most powerful and evocative of spiritual symbols.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and it was stressed the loving service. That was one of the things that the Christian tradition pioneered in the world, and now we more or less take it for granted, but that the oppressed and the slaves and the underdogs are in the eyes of God, also children of God, and have the same standing and the same dignity and deserve the same respect as all other human beings.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you stress that, to stress the service. This is something Barbara and I have talked about on a number of occasions, that often one hears statements of religiosity and belief and so on that never mention anything at all about service. And to me, a real test, I think to all of us, a real test of the depth of one's religious position or religious message is whether or not service to other human beings and perhaps to all life is involved.
Right. And every tradition, of course, has it in one way or the other community, but that is another aspect that was particularly emphasized all through Christian tradition, the aspect of community, that we are all children of God, and it's a worldwide community, an all-embracing community that embraces all races and all forms of human life, and actually embraces also, rightly understood, all animals, all plants. And we speak of the cosmic Christ that is not really Jesus, but we call him Jesus the Christ. It is that human divine principle is the Christ, and that is a cosmic principle. And we all have access to it, and we all live from it, and it is our true self is that cosmic Christ. And Christians believe that of every human being.
One of the things that we've been talking about with respect to different religious traditions is what are their master stories, their central stories. And for Christianity, we have spoken of the death and resurrection of Jesus, but it sounds to me like you would place the emphasis much more strongly on the life of Jesus.
Yes, definitely so. Of course, one has to mention the death of anyone whose life one tells. Like the great mystic from Islam, Rumi, said, no one will know my name until my last breath is out, meaning that my life is not completed. My name is what I stand for. Even I will not know it until my last breath is out. And so, if one speaks about the life of Jesus, one will also have to speak of his death. But every tradition has its ups and downs, and in the course of its course, one always has to go back to the origins. And when we go back to the origins from our time, we must stress the life of Jesus, because in recent history, the death of Jesus has received too much emphasis. The death sprang out of his life. if somebody lives that kind of life of standing up for the underdogs, that person will be crucified in one way or the other, put to death in one way or the other, and that is why Jesus had to die. But that kind of life cannot be suppressed, and that is why we speak then of Jesus' resurrection. He lives.
Well, that makes me want to move ahead to today's theme. We've identified a theme for each of the religions, Brother David, that we'll be talking about. And for example, last week we spoke with Rabbi Deborah Bronstein and talked about Judaism, and the theme was justice. And today, Christianity, the theme is gratitude, but rather in the way you refer to it, as gratefulness. And we were discussing just the other day how gratefulness seems much more human-centered and less abstract, much more concrete than the term gratitude. Can you tell us a little bit about why you use gratefulness and what it means in your own writing and work?
Well, I use gratefulness partly because gratitude is too much used. It's like a coin that has been used so often that it is thin, worn thin. And so people hear gratitude and don't think twice. But when you say gratefulness, then they wake up a little bit and listen. But also because gratitude has really two phases. When you look at your own experience and try to remember how it feels when you are grateful, there are really two phases to that experience. And the first is that your heart fills up with appreciation, with a deep sense of appreciation for the gratuitously given, for something which is gratuitously given. And your heart fills up, and then, as if it were a vessel, it overflows. And that overflowing is the second phase of gratitude, and that we call thankfulness. So gratefulness and thankfulness are two aspects of that one attitude that we call gratitude.
That's beautiful.
So is gratefulness what I draw in to my center, and perhaps thankfulness what I send out from that center?
That's right. Gratefulness is very, very quiet and just fills your heart. And then, as we say, my heart is so full that my mouth overflows with joy, with thanks, with an expression of joy for this gratuitously given gift. And the most important thing is to begin to recognize that everything is given. Everything is given. We are ourselves given to ourselves. We haven't made ourselves. We haven't bought ourselves. We find ourselves as a given, in a given world, at a given situation. Everything's given. And therefore, the only appropriate attitude is gratitude or gratefulness, grateful living.
I would like to ask, bring the conversation to the sometimes almost overwhelming challenges that people are facing all around the world today. Every culture, every nation, every religion seems to have its unique set of challenges that many people think, well, it's never been this difficult before. How are we going to respond to the challenges of today? And I wonder if you would talk a little bit about the attitude of gratefulness with relation to the way that it could shape a solution or a way through in the circumstances of present day, which are sometimes so difficult.
That's good.
I'm so glad you asked that question, Barbara, because when you say, as I do, that you can be always grateful, every moment you can be grateful, and every moment, because every moment is a given moment, the only appropriate response is grateful. Ask, can you really be grateful for everything? And my answer is no, you cannot be grateful for everything, but you can be grateful in every situation. And so you have to ask yourself, well, for what are you grateful then? And the answer is, most of the time, for the opportunity to enjoy life. And when we start living gratefully, when we start waking up and not taking things simply for granted, we notice that everything is gift, and that most of the time it's the opportunity to enjoy our food, to enjoy just simply taking a breath, which is a great gift to be able to breathe, opportunity to walk, to move ourselves freely. We notice these gifts only when we are deprived of them, when one day we are not feeling well and we can't breathe well, then we notice what a gift it is to breathe. So everything is most of the time opportunity to enjoy. And for this opportunity, we are grateful. And when we are in practice, then when something comes around for which we cannot be grateful, we cannot be grateful for sickness, for death of a beloved, for war, for exploitation, for the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. We cannot be grateful for many of these things. But when we are confronted with a situation in which this hits us, then we ask ourselves spontaneously, what is this now the opportunity for? And sometimes it is the opportunity to do something about it. You see it. You are in a situation, even if it's just the smallest little thing, you can do something about it. And always it is the opportunity to learn something from it, and always it's the opportunity to grow by it. Life always gives us good gifts. We don't always notice that or hardly are able to believe it, but when we look back on life, we see that every moment gives us an opportunity that is for something positive.
You know,
I'm sorry,
Jim. I was thinking that since we're in good time today, that maybe we would like to ask our callers today that if anyone had a question for Brother David on this subject, that if they pressed one on their phone keypad, we probably have time for one or two questions right now. So I'll put that out to the group.
That would be great.
Let me ask while we're waiting for that, if I could, just so we put it into the conversation. When I hear Brother David talking about gratefulness and thankfulness, I'm thinking about one of the reasons why I think we all believe that we might be living in a second axial age or an age of real cultural change with respect to religion and spirituality is the growth of the interreligious or interfaith movement. And it's just occurring to me that we can learn a great deal about modes of gratefulness and modes of thankfulness from people from different cultures and different faiths when we come together.
Well, one of the great positive aspects of gratefulness is that every tradition that I have come across, every spiritual tradition, no matter how different they may be from one another, will say, gratefulness, yes, we know what that is. Yes, it is at the very core of our faith, at the very core of our tradition. And even a tradition like Buddhism, where you are wondering how does that fit in, who is grateful to whom, it's not as with us in the West, there isn't really there isn't even an I, there is an illusion, and there isn't some God or so to whom you're grateful. And yet, I've rarely found more grateful people than the Buddhists who are grateful to one another. And if we are grateful to one another for the wealth that the other tradition brings to us, as you said, every tradition has something to give to the other, then this interreligious dialogue will have a very solid basis. And that's what you need today.
Well, that's actually one of the questions we wanted to discuss today, is that another part of the larger context of these conversations is the nature of the interfaith encounter, dialogue, understanding, and its importance in the world today. So leaving a sort of jumping off Christianity and jumping through gratefulness, what are some of the things that you've noticed or have insights about, Brother David, in terms of the status of the interfaith dialogue in the world today?
Well, one of the great questions that interfaith dialogue has to face is that for most people, for a growing, ever-growing, rapidly growing number of people in our world, the notion of a God who is separate from us, separate from the world, is no longer tenable, is no longer significant. Everything hangs together with everything, and so we have to take a new approach there. And the new approach is that we look into ourselves and base our conviction on our own deepest experience. That is something which happens in all, I see it happening in all the different traditions. I have compared it to a process that took place millions and billions of years ago when in nature, up to a certain point, only external skeletons existed. That is something like we still know the bugs to have. The bugs don't have an inner skeleton. They have a skeleton that's on the outside. That hard shell is their skeleton. Or the lobsters, they don't have bones inside. They have a carapace outside that holds them together. All of a sudden, at least all of a sudden in geological terms, nature invented an inner skeleton. And now the living beings are held together from the outside, but from the inside. And something similar is happening on a psychological psychological sense in our very time. I think the generation of our parents and grandparents was still held together by outside beliefs, things that were brought to them from the outside, customs, a firm social framework that held them together. And all that is crumbling, and so people have to learn to stand on their own two feet, to trust themselves. And that is frightening, and that is why so many people are frightened today, this deep existential angst that we experience, because we feel like lobsters who all of a sudden have nothing on the outside that holds them together, but we have to dance with a column, with a vertebrae, with a spinal cord. And that's frightening.
You know, Jim, that reminds me a lot of the concepts that you've been describing in terms of thriving in the cross currents and cultural change along with interreligious dialogue. I wonder if you have some comments to make here.
Well, I love this. I'm just scribbling as Brother David is talking. I love this idea of nature moving from an exoskeletal approach to
an endoskeleton.
Right. And it's fantastic. And the idea that we're doing that now, we're defined less by the kinds of outside identity crafters that or identity suppliers, and now trying to forge our own identities and learning that we can do that better together than we can do it in isolation from one another. I think about the difference. Go ahead.
I see this happening in all the different traditions, and so that is something that we have in common, and that also hangs together with no longer being able to think of a God that's separated from us. And that is, again, one of those points where the notion of gratefulness becomes so helpful, because everything is given. And that source, that mystery that we cannot fathom, experience that we don't know where we come from, we don't know where we go to, that mystery is the source from which all the gifts come. And that is inexhaustible. And That is one way in which we experience the divine. And another way in which we experience it is through everything there is, all the 100,000 things, and we are part of it. So we are part of the given, and we find the divine in our own depths, because we cannot fathom ourselves. We never completely understand ourselves as human beings. We have this more and ever more in all dimensions, that is our truth, and that is also deserves to be called divine. And then we have this dynamic element in the world, that's the third aspect in which we experience the divine, and that is the spirit, love, life, creativity, all these dynamic aspects. And they too are inexhaustible, not fully understandable for us. And so we experience the divine as the source, as the gift, and as the thanksgiving, because the dynamic element is thanksgiving. It's doing our own thing, and that is the fullest form of thanks. And if we see the divine in this way, then we are fully embedded in the divine. We are part of it. We are not simply God, but we are fully alive by the divine spirit and embedded, and the whole universe is embedded in God, and God is in all, and all is in God. And this has been called the panentheistic God view, in contrast to the pantheistic one, where simply everything is God. But if we speak of the panentheistic, this little N meaning in, everything is in God and God is in everything, then we get a relationship, then we can thank God, can praise God, can serve God in one another. And that makes, for what religions have been doing and celebrating all throughout the centuries. So this panentheistic view is really the one for the future.
Yes, I certainly agree. I think that's one of the reasons why we created these video meditations, is that we decided to take a look at, we chose nine universal themes, such as gratitude, peace, healing, compassion, justice, etc. And then we looked through the scripture and the literature of the various traditions, 13 different religious traditions in total, in order to see what each tradition had to say about that theme. And it was such a rich learning experience for me and for Megan as we put this together, because we could see that these human gifts and the places of quality that we all live in as a human family, above and beyond our cultures and our traditions and our nationalities, that there's something so similar about the way that we all hold views on these human qualities, even if our religions might state them or look at them in a different way. And to me, that is another way of describing what Brother David is saying right now, that something transcends the symbols of our belief system and brings us to a more common point of our universal humanity.
Yes, I so agree with you, Barbara. That the more we are engaged in interreligious dialogue, that means the more we come to know people of a different faith, the more we realize that all the basic questions are the same for all of us as human beings. And the different religions are just ways to help us. And usually the one with which we grew up can serve us best, because we are most used to it, we know it best. But sometimes people have to find another one, or even piece their own together from a variety of traditions. All this happens today. But the questions that for which we seek answers, or the great concerns in life for which we seek support, they are the same for all of us. And gratefulness can be a means for that. It can be a real practice, just like the practice of yoga or the practice of zazen, zen, or any other spiritual practice. Grateful living can be a practice like that. And it has some advantages, for instance, that it gives immediate results. If you start being grateful now, you will, by the day, end of the day, be already more joyful, because gratefulness is the key to happiness.
As we wind up, I just want to put a last question to Brother David. He spoke about Jesus as a mystic and a revolutionary. I thought that was very powerful, and the discussion of gratefulness, especially gratefulness as a practice, as a spiritual practice, amazing. And I just want to ask him to say a few words about the role of grace in all of this. It's such an important part of the spiritual experience and such an important part of Christianity and other traditions as well.
Thank you. Thank you for asking that question, Jim. Yes, grace is one of those key words for the Christian tradition. And sometimes, again, we have to replace it by a more contemporary word that says the same thing to our ears, and that is the word blessing. And that shows how gratefulness is such an important part for that loving concern that we show to all people. The image that comes to my mind when I hear the word blessing is one that I received from a rabbi, actually, who said that the symbol for blessing in the Holy Land is the River Jordan, and it comes from the mountains and it flows into the Lake of Galilee. And if anybody has ever seen the Lake of Galilee, we know it's a paradise landscape. It's wonderful water, full of fish, surrounded by orchards and gardens and flowers. And then that same water flows out of the Lake of Galilee, and after a relatively short travel, flows into the Dead Sea, and it's surrounded by desert and no fish, and the water cannot even be good for drinking. And the rabbi asks, what happened here? It's the same water. And the answer is, in the Lake of Galilee, the water of blessing flows in and flows out. And in the lake, in the Dead Sea, it just flows in and gets stagnant. And that is so important for us, because when we receive blessing and pass it on, then blessing flows. And that very word blessing comes from the same root as the word blood. Blessing is the bloodstream of the universe. It flows through the whole human family. And it is the way in which we show ourselves grateful for the many blessings that we receive every day, that we pass them on to others. That is the most important action of gratitude, to be alert to the blessings, receive the blessings, and pass them on to others. So that's why I like this notion of grace, and I think that is also why it has traditionally been so central for Christians.
Brother David, that's a wonderful lesson to leave everyone with. You know, I think I neglected to mention at the beginning that Brother David is calling us from Switzerland today. So, as he put it, it's a little past his bedtime, and we don't want to keep him over. But we are, I would say, incredibly grateful and feel so honored and a lot of love that you were able to be with us on this call today, and I'm sure that everyone on the call feels the same.
Thank you, Barbara, and I'm glad that people can stay with us. Then if they go to our website, gratefulness.org, they can hear more.
I'm sure you'll have lots of visitors to that site. And before I just say a little bit about our guest for next week and sign off with Brother David, I wonder, Jim, if you had any closing comments of your own.
Just that we actually did, without focusing directly on it, we actually did, I think, have a real engagement with the idea that things are changing spiritually, that we really are in a time of sea change, that we can talk about the ways in which different traditions, and we did today, different traditions irradiate each other, as a great mystic, Douglas Steer, used to talk about mutual irradiation. You, from your tradition, shine a light into areas that I never really realized were in mine all along. And I heard that throughout what Brother David had to say, and I'm really grateful to reconnect with him today and to hear his incredible wisdom, and it was a real joy. And thank you, David.
Thank you, Jim. And with regard to that sea change of which you speak, the one important word for all of us is fear not. We must go forward without fear, trust and confidence, and that will be the most important way to meet that sea change.
Thank you.
Absolutely.